We are starting Chapter 7 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called The Slug Club. Harry spent a lot of the last week of the holidays pondering the meaning of Malfoy's behavior in Nocturne Alley. What disturbed him most was the satisfied look on Malfoy's face as he had left the shop. Nothing that made Malfoy look happy could be good news. To his slight annoyance, however, neither Ron nor Hermione seemed quite as curious about Malfoy's activities as he was. Or at the least, they seemed to get bored after discussing it after a few days. "Yes, I've already agreed it was fishy, Harry," said Hermione a little impatiently. She was sitting on the windowsill in Fred and George's room with her feet up on one of the cardboard boxes, and had only grudgingly looked up from her new copy of Advanced Rune Translation. "But haven't we agreed there could be a lot of explanations?" "Maybe he's broken his hand of glory," said Ron vaguely as he attempted. As he attempted to straighten his broomstick's bent tail twigs. Remember that shriveled up arm Malfoy had?
Wait a minute, why did you pause?
Because the Kindle didn't switch to the next page fast.
Oh, I thought that you were like trying to fight the urge for making a double entendre.
Oh no. That's a good one though. I appreciate that your mind goes to the double entendres before mine does now.
Well, it's just because I've been found by you.
Oh, good. Well, that's the way it should be. But what about when he said, "Don't forget to keep that one safe," asked Harry for the umpteenth time. That sounded to me like Borgin's got another one of the broken objects, and Malfoy wants both. "You reckon?" said Ron, now trying to scrape some dirt off his broom handle. "Yeah, I do," said Harry. When neither Ron nor Hermione answered, he said, "Malfoy's father is in Azkaban. Don't you think Malfoy like revenge?" Ron looked up, blinking. "Malfoy revenge? What can he do about it?" "That's my point. I don't know," said Harry, frustrated. "But he's up to something, and I think we should take it seriously. His father's a Death Eater, and..." Harry broke off, his eyes fixed on the window behind Hermione. His mouth open, a startling thought had just occurred to him. "Harry?" said Hermione in an anxious voice. "What's wrong?" "Your scar is not hurting again, is it?" asked Ron nervously. "He's a Death Eater," said Harry slowly. "He's replaced his father as a Death Eater." There was silence, and then Ron erupted in laughter. "Malfoy? He's 16, Harry. You think you know who would let Malfoy join?" "It seems very unlikely, Harry," said Hermione in a repressive sort of voice. "What makes you think..." "In Madame Malkin's. She didn't touch him, but he yelled and jerked his arm away from her when she went to roll up his sleeve. It was his left arm. He's been brandished with a dark mark." Ron and Hermione looked at each other. "Well," said Ron, sounding thoroughly unconvinced. "I think he just wanted to get out of there, Harry," said Hermione. "He showed Borgin something we couldn't see," Harry pressed on stubbornly. "Something that seriously scared Borgin. It was the mark. I know it. He was showing Borgin who he was dealing with, and you saw how seriously Borgin took him." Hermione and Ron exchanged another look. "I'm not sure, Harry." "Yeah, I still don't reckon you know who would let Malfoy join." Annoyed, but absolutely convinced he was right, Harry snatched up a pile of filthy Quidditch robes and left the room. Mrs. Weasley had been urging them for days not to leave their washing and packing until the last moment. On the landing, he bumped into Ginny, who was returning to her room carrying a pile of freshly laundered clothes. "I wouldn't go into the kitchen just now," she warned him. "There's a lot of phlegm around." "I'll be careful not to slip in it," Harry smiled. Sure enough, when he entered the kitchen, it was to find Fleur sitting at the kitchen table in full flow about plans for her wedding to Bill, while Mrs. Weasley kept watch over a pile of self-peeling sprouts looking bad-tempered. "Bill and I have decided on only two bridesmaids, Ginny and Gabriella, who look very sweet together. I'm thinking of dressing them in pale gold. Pink would, of course, be horrible, with Ginny's hair." "Ah, Harry," said Mrs. Weasley loudly, cutting across Fleur's monologue. "Good, I wanted to explain about the security arrangements for the journey to Hogwarts tomorrow. We've got ministry cars again, and there'll be oars waiting at the station." "Is Tonks going to be there?" asked Harry, handing over his Quidditch things. No, I don't think so. She's been stationed somewhere else from what Arthur said. She has let herself go at Tonks, Fleur mused, examining her own stunning reflection on the back of a teaspoon. A big mistake, if you ask. Yes, thank you, said Mrs. Weasley, tartly, cutting across Fleur again. You'd better get on, Harry. I want the trunks ready tonight, if possible, so we don't have the usual last-minute scramble. And, in fact, their departure the following morning was smoother than usual. The ministry cars glided up to the front of the burrow to find them waiting, trunks packed. Hermione's cat, Crookshanks, safely enclosed in his traveling basket. And Hedwig, Ron's owl, Pig Widgeon, and Ginny's new purple pygmy Puff Arnold in cages. Au revoir, Harry, said Fleur throatily, kissing him goodbye. Ron hurried forward, looking hopeful, but Ginny stuck out her foot and Ron fell, sprawling at the dust in Fleur's feet. Furious, red-faced and dirt-spattered, he hurried into the car without saying goodbye. There was no cheerful Hagrid waiting for them at King's Cross Station. Instead, two grim-faced, bearded aurors in dark muggle suits moved forward the moment the car stopped, and, flanking the party, marched them into the station without speaking. "Quick, quick, through the barrier," said Mrs. Weasley, who seemed a little flustered at this austere efficiency. "Harry better go first She looked inquiringly at one of the aurors, who nodded briefly, seized Harry's upper arm, and attempted to steer him toward the barrier between platforms 9 and 10. "I can walk, thanks," said Harry irritably, jerking his arm out of the aurors' grip. He pushed his trolley directly at the solid barrier, ignoring his silent companion, and found himself a second later standing on platform 9 3/4, where the Scarlet Hogwarts Express stood belching steam over the crowd. Hermione and the Weasleys joined him within seconds. Without waiting to consult the grim-faced auror, Harry motioned to Ron and Hermione to follow him up the platform, looking for an empty compartment. "We can't, Harry," said Hermione, looking apologetic. "Ron and I have got to go to the prefix carriage first and then patrol the corridors for a bit." "Yeah, I forgot," said Harry. "You better get straight on the train, all of you. You've only got a few minutes to go," said Mrs. Weasley, consulting her watch. "Well, have a lovely term, Ron." "Mrs. Weasley, can I have a quick word?" said Harry, making up his mind at the spur of the moment. "Of course," said... Oh, sorry, Mr. Weasley, can I have a quick word? "Of course," said Mr. Weasley, who looked slightly surprised, but followed Harry out of earshot of the others nevertheless. Harry had thought it through carefully and come to the conclusion that if he was to tell anyone, Mr. Weasley was the right person. Firstly, because he worked at the ministry and was therefore the best position to make further investigations. And secondly, because he thought that there was not too much risk of Mr. Weasley exploding with anger. He could see Mrs. Weasley and the grim-faced auror casting the pair of them suspicious looks as they moved away. "When we were in Diagon Alley," Harry began, but Mr. Weasley forestalled him with a grimace. "Am I about to discover where you, Ron, and Hermione disappeared to while you were supposed to be in the back room of Fred and George's shop?" "How did you..." "Harry, please. You're talking to the man who raised Fred and George." "Yeah, all right. We weren't in the back room." "Very well, then. Let's hear the worst." "Well, we followed Draco Malfoy. We used my invisibility cloak." "Did you have any particular reason for doing so, or was it a mere whim?" "Because I thought Malfoy was up to something," said Harry, disregarding Mr. Weasley's look of mingled exasperation and amusement. "He'd given his mother the slip, and I wanted to know why." "Of course you did," said Mr. Weasley, sounding resigned. "Well, did you find out why?" "He went into Borgin and Burke's," said Harry, "and started bullying the bloke there, Borgin, to help him fix something. And he said he wanted Borgin to keep something else for him. He made it sound like it was the same kind of thing that needed fixing, like they were a pair. And..." Harry took a deep breath. "There's something else. We saw Malfoy jump about a mile when Madame Malkin tried to touch his left arm. I think he's been branded with a dark mark. I think he's replaced his father as a Death Eater." Mr. Weasley looked taken aback. After a moment, he said, "Harry, I doubt whether you know who would allow a 16-year-old. "Does anyone really know what you know who would or wouldn't do?" asked Harry angrily. "Mr. Weasley, I'm sorry, but isn't it worth investigating? If Miss Malfoy wants something fixing, and he needs to threaten Borgin to get it done, it's probably something dark or dangerous, isn't it?" "I doubt it, to be honest, Harry," said Mr. Weasley slowly. "You see, when Lucius Malfoy was arrested, we raided his house. We took away everything that might have been dangerous." "I think you missed something," said Harry stubbornly. "Maybe," said Mr. Weasley, but Harry could tell that Mr. Weasley was humoring him. There was a whistle behind them. Nearly everyone had boarded the train, and the doors were closing. "You better hurry," said Mr. Weasley, as Mrs. Weasley cried, "Harry, quickly." He hurried forward, and Mr. and Mrs. Weasley helped him load his trunk onto the train. "Now, dear, you better be coming to us for Christmas. It's all fixed with Dumbledore, so we'll see you quite soon," said Mrs. Weasley through the window, as Harry slammed the door shut behind him and the train began to move. "You make sure you look after yourself," and the train was gathering speed. "Be good," and she was jogging to keep up now. "Stay safe." Harry waved until the train turned a corner and Mr. and Mrs. Weasley were lost to view, and then turned to see where the others had gone to. He supposed Ron and Hermione were cloistered in the prefix carriage, but Ginny was a little way along the corridor chatting to some friends. He made his way toward her, dragging his trunk. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, baby kitten. It's time for bed. Sleep well, darling. I love you so much. Good night, beautiful.